I begin, I'm going to warn you that there will be spoilers. If you haven't seen Jennifer's Body, I recommend that you do so and come back. It is available to stream and well worth the watch. Welcome, listeners, to the first episode of the Bad Movie Bunny podcast, where horror and thrillers are reviewed, but is the next scream that you hear your own? My name is Lisa, or the Bad Movie Bunny, and for this episode, we'll delve into 2009's Jennifer's Body, directed by Karen Kusama, written by Diablo Cody, and starring Megan Fox, Amanda Seyfried, Adam Brody, and Johnny Simmons, while we ask the burning question, do demons really possess cheerleaders? It might explain a few things for a few listeners. Let's jump into it. Jennifer's Body is the story of two longtime friends that are opposites in every way, slowly being drawn apart due to insecurities and the need for attention, be it from the other girl or from boys that would want them sexually. The divide becomes more pronounced when one begins to eat and disembowel their male classmates. Our story begins in the bedroom of a teenage girl watching an infomercial as a second girl looks in at her through the window. Cut to a mental institution and a shot of presents, letters, and photos as a girl narrates through her day, kicking staff, and getting herself stuck in solitary. Hell is a teenage girl indeed. She starts to recount what got her to the asylum. It all started in the small town of Devil's Kettle, named for an odd waterfall where water ran into a hole but never came out of it. Anita, a little too aptly nicknamed Needy, played by Amanda Seyfried, recounts events involving her longtime friend Jennifer, played by Megan Fox. Looking at the two girls, one would think they wouldn't run in the same social circles. There's a close-up shot of Jennifer, an extroverted cheerleader who carries herself with the confidence of your typical high school queen bee. Needy, on the other hand, comes across as more introverted, studious, more of the nerdy, well, needy follower. However, the two girls were friends since they were children. Jennifer exploits this in various ways, most notably dragging Needy, no doubt a trustworthy, well-behaved and handy alibi for sneaking out over the years, to a dive bar to see local indie band Low Shoulder, led by singer Nikolai Wolf, played by Adam Brody. Jennifer is hyped up for their tight sound. Tight sound, sure. Interesting note, in 2009, or at least for this movie, salty meant attractive and sexy, not bitter due to feeling embarrassed or attacked. This is kind of funny to me as the characters will find themselves humiliated and attacked on account of Jennifer and her behavior. Jennifer walks up to the singer, referred to as Salty, and introduces herself. She offers to tease drinks at the bar for him, and as she goes away, the band talk among themselves and wonder who among the girls is a virgin. Needy overhears the band comment on the provocative way Jennifer dresses and carries herself, and in turn defends her, telling them that this was her best friend that they were talking about, and that Jennifer was indeed a virgin. When Jennifer finds this out, she gets pissy that Needy said all of this to defend her honor. But the irritation goes away when the band starts their set. Jennifer just stares at the band hypnotized. Needy stares at Jennifer. The festivities heat up as a fire consumes the bar, killing many inside. Jennifer then leaves with the band instead of Needy. Needy gets kicked aside as the bar blows up. Okay, was this really the time to play groupie? I'll give you this. Adam Brody looked good in Grind, but why abandon your car and friend for a group of guys after you climb out of the window of a burning bar by way of a grungy toilet as you see people die around you? Later that night, after frantically calling her boyfriend Chip, played by Johnny Simmons, and a couple of jump scares, Needy is treated to a blood-soaked Jennifer, who raids her refrigerator and goes right into her mother's forbidden Boston Market meal like it was a drunken slumber party. When Needy objects, Jennifer just roars and pukes viscous goo before running off into the night. The next day, as though the hangover were lifted with a 12-ounce bottle of blue Powerade, and the horror of the previous night never happened, Jennifer just shows up at school. Her hair is perfectly done. Her clothes are stylish, provocative, and no doubt the envy, among other things, to her classmates. Whatever makeup she put on looked normal, and not at all to cover up a face that could be haggard, tired, pale, or as though she just went through a bar fire followed by puking goo at a friend's house. Jennifer acts nonchalant and brushes off Needy's concerns. The level of narcissism she exhibits in this scene, and others that follow, is chilling. The town is devastated by the bar fire and the deaths it caused, but this seems to bore Jennifer. On the plus side for Low Shoulder, they were rumored to be heroes during the fire, and as a result, they enjoy increased popularity, sales, and more gigs. And this includes one at the school's spring formal. Best part? They'll even perform for free and give 3% of the profits from a popular single to the families of the fire victims. And how dare Needy ask in class about the other 97% or suggest that greed may be afoot? Needy's concerns are for Jennifer, who'd been acting strangely since that night. In the days that follow, Jennifer seduces and brutally murders, disembowels and eats the organs of boys that would be more than willing to go off for alone time with her, whether you're the football captain or the shy emo kid. Now, I can see boys being more horny than smart when it comes to an offer from an attractive girl. I couldn't help but ask myself if the outsider kid was suspicious of being pranked. How many horror movies started on account of the poorly planned practical jokes going horribly, disfiguringly wrong? All the same, she's eating her male classmates, and no one seems to notice or suspect this, or how sickly she'll appear in some scenes. Now, despite Chip telling Needy that Jennifer is toxic, Needy's still worried. One night, while spending some quality time with Chip, Needy panics, senses something horrible has happened, runs out on him, and while driving erratically, nearly hits Jennifer, who is once again covered in blood and looking deranged, but otherwise undamaged. How is that? Jennifer then heads to Needy's house, lets herself in, and tells her about the night of the concert fire. When Jennifer went off with the band then offers her as a virgin sacrifice to Satan in exchange for fame and fortune. Now, as they start the ritual, where they are about to stab her, they start to improvise a song they would make about her, or at least the name Jennifer. And this is a cheesy, young love, oh, I want to get your phone number kind of chorus that was very chilling and pretty nasty in light of what they were about to do to her. But since Jennifer wasn't a virgin, the band was still granted that fame after stabbing her. But Jennifer was alive and possessed. She was invulnerable after eating a person, but she had to keep doing it pretty consistently. The next day, Needy does a little research at the school library and determines that Jennifer is a succubus who has to feed on human flesh and can only be killed when she's hungry. She tells Chip. He never liked Jennifer. He's told her that she should stay away from her, but for some reason does not believe what he's told. Needy then breaks up with him to keep him from going to the dance, where Jennifer will definitely be in attendance, and no doubt looking for a midnight snack. Low Shoulder will be there as well, and we can only hope that they will not sacrifice anyone else or set off any fire alarms. Chip goes anyway. Hey, why let a little thing like a breakup stand in the way? Who knows who you'll get to rebound with? And sure enough, there's Jennifer. He doesn't like her, but seems to believe her when she tells him that Needy cheated on him, and follows her to a secluded spot near a dirty pool. She then starts to feed on him, only to be intercepted by Needy, who fights Jennifer. Probably the first time she ever stood up to her. Right down to telling Jennifer what a lousy friend she was, from stealing toys as a kid to trying to steal away any attention that boys ever paid to her. Jennifer does escape the pool area, despite Chip impaling her with a skimmer before dying. Needy then follows Jennifer home, and after some wrestling and cool little quips, stabs her in the heart. Because Jennifer was weakened and didn't get to feed on Chip, this kills her in the demon possessing her. Needy is then caught and committed to the asylum, where she later starts to show signs of having powers herself. She then escapes the asylum to hunt down Low Shoulder. Now let's just say I got more out of those end credits than any from the MCU. Now here's a few things that I liked, didn't care for, and a few tropes that stood out to me. What I liked was that this was an interesting take on the demonic possession movie overall. Particularly how the band tried to sacrifice Jennifer for fame, only to create a monster. The dynamic, particularly the power dynamic between Needy and Jennifer, was very well acted. It shows how a childhood friendship changes, and how people grow, they can grow into something that's bad for the other person, no matter how close you were as little kids. Sometimes people just grow apart and need to do so. For whatever reason, Needy just couldn't do that, at least not until the climax at the abandoned pool. Given how blasé and narcissistic Jennifer was before and after she was possessed, it showed how drawn to her Needy really was, right down to the more sexualized moments. The cover art of the movie shows Megan Fox as Jennifer the demonic sex pot, but the story felt more like a parallel for toxic friendships, and how people may need to part, even if there is an undertone of sexual attraction. That cover was marketed to men, but I see more women enjoying this movie. This could account for it being panned when it came out, only to have a newfound cult status in the wake of the Me Too movement, where more of who this movie was likely geared toward watched it and saw that it wasn't just a cheap slasher movie. Now, some of the things I found a little problematic included the slutty girl versus the pretty, quote-unquote, ugly nerd, and the power dynamics and how they played out. What I also found a little off-putting was how Chip would preach about how terrible Jennifer was to Needy, and by some turns understandably so, particularly when it came to time they spent together, only to not believe her when she told him about how Jennifer was behaving, especially in light of students disappearing, and then later goes off with Jennifer to that pool house. I still can't get over how the boys in this movie, some of whom Jennifer wouldn't normally look at, would willingly go off alone with her. That, to me, reeked of the kind of prank where a jock runs off with your clothes, or something gets covered in pee. Then again, more horny than smart, I suppose. And with this newfound invulnerability after feeding, why didn't Jennifer go after Low Shoulder, given what they did to her? They were going to be in town to play that dance. They made the deal with Satan for fame and fortune, not invulnerability. Now, as to some of the funny tropes I found, one of them involved how every horror movie has an occult section in their library, even a small one. One thing that was interesting to me, something that comes up less than I'd like in horror movies, particularly anything to do with zombies and demons, is how Needy got some of Jennifer's ability in the end. It was from the bite that Needy sustained in her fight with Jennifer, but the two girls were going at it pretty hard, enough to get scraped. Skin was broken, and whatever possessed Jennifer got into bodily fluids, and it's easy enough to pass through an open wound or even an organ such as an eye, and lead to infection, or possession in this case. Emily Jacobson of FilmDays.net brings up an interesting way of how a trope was turned on its ear. This being the trope of how the promiscuous, overly sexualized, quote-unquote, hot girl is often the first to die in many a horror movie. If she isn't the first to go, she might meet her end a little more than halfway through the movie. Either way, she isn't virginal final girl material. But in the case of Jennifer's body, Jennifer's sexuality ended up preventing her death when she was sacrificed at the hands of a group of men who stated that they hated girls. Girls that were a good chunk of their rabid fan base and their bread and butter. Did they clear that with Satan? That very sexuality made Jennifer temporarily invulnerable. She slashed herself in front of Needy in one scene, only to heal instantaneously. And here's another twist on that trope. In the 1987 Italian slasher movie Stage Fright, aka Deliria, directed by Michael Soavi, the final girl admits to an affair in the beginning of the movie, so there's that. And here are a few fun facts about the music in the movie. The soundtrack was released by record label Fueled by Ramen and featured popular pop, punk, and indie bands including Florence and the Machine, All Time Low, and Panic at the Disco. The title Jennifer's Body is a reference to a song of the same name by the band Hole. This track was on the Live Through This album. Before the end credits roll, another track from that album, Violet, plays. The website Chud.com reported that the filmmakers were looking to cast Pete Wentz of the band Fall Out Boy and Joel Madden of Good Charlotte as Nikolai Wolfe before casting Adam Brody. Brody's vocals were provided by Ryan Levine, who played another member of Low Shoulder. Johnny Simmons, who played Chip, was also considered for Nikolai. And now, to answer the burning question, do demons possess cheerleaders? Well, I was one myself in the sixth grade, and later on the JV squad as a high school sophomore. I had fun in sixth grade, but I was encouraged to imitate Paula Abdul in other MTV videos. And some classmates and friends hinted that I only made the squad because I was thinner then and could jump. In the 10th grade, it was indicated by more than a few boys that I was too heavy to be a cheerleader. Was this the result of something supernatural? Probably just the green-eyed monsters of high school entitlement and drama. Either way, at that point, I wasn't having fun due to some of the girls on mine and the varsity squad being less than nice, so I traded it in for drama club and more art classes, using some of those skills to review film opuses such as Cheerleader Camp for a blog. Maybe this could be a future episode. What do you think? Thus ends the first episode, the maiden voyage, no pun intended, of the Bad Movie Buddy podcast. This episode, as well as a few others, will be a solo mini-review of a movie that I hadn't seen ever, or I haven't seen in a long time. Either way, they've been collecting dust on many a watch list. As I go along, I do plan to have guests, be they horror fans, podcasters, friends, all the above, whatever scheduling allows. If you want to find more content from me, you can visit my blog at www.badmoviebunnies.com or follow me on Twitch as Bad Movie Bunnies. Who knows, I may pop on for a video game live stream. Until then, thank you for listening and tune in next time.